Thanks so much for being with us today on the Ideas Network, turning our attention to weather, and we'll get into climate, too, with our two guests, John Martin, professor and former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. John, good to have you back.
Glad to be here, Larry.
Steve Ackerman, our guest as well, vice chancellor for research and grad education at UW-Madison, also a professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. And Steve, good to see your smiling face.
Oh, it's good to see yours as well. It's nice seeing people, even if it's two-dimensional.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, we have lots that we can talk about. We can talk about spring weather. We can take a look at climate with our two guests. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions. What's been the warmest temperature you've gotten in your area so far? Do you predict more snow before the warmth is here to stay? You have a good weather photo that you want to send to us. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. And already we have Mo from Oconto on the line. Let's just go right to the phones. Mo, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, my question is, it seems to be that we're predicting to have a hotter and drier summer, but then the heat allows more moisture to collect in the atmosphere and leads to heavier downpours. What is some of the higher downpours that we've had in Wisconsin, and how much does it actually take to raise a river level in a summer when we might have flooding still?
Yeah. Well, who wants to grab that one?
Well, I missed a little bit of the first part of the question, but I think I got the second part, which was what kind of, you know, rain intensities does it take to really flood rivers? I think it's different for every single creek, stream, and river, and since they're all interdependent. And it's, so I don't know if there's a single answer to that, but I'd say it's probably relatively rare that a half inch to an inch of rain does really substantial flooding damage, unless it's already been, you know, the region's been prepared for it by a couple of other similarly sized events in close succession. But if it's, if we were, for instance, to say, get to the first week of April and we get a 1 inch rainfall around, you know, large parts of southern Wisconsin in one day, that's probably not going to cause us too much trouble if we can then go another several days without any substantial rain on top of that. But I'd guess when you get into the 2 inch range per day or something, no matter what the predecessor conditions were, you're probably in some kind of trouble depending on the exact topography of the basin you live near. But
and I, think
I don't
the,
know for sure.
I think the first part of the question had to do with the amount of rainfall that we've experienced at one time in Wisconsin. You know, have we ever gotten 10 inches of rain in one fell swoop, so to speak, John?
I don't know what the single day record for the state is, but I have a feeling that we're somewhere around 4 to 6 inches here in Madison, and that may even be conservative. I'm thinking about the summer of 1996 in June. I think we had a 4.8 inch rain in one day, maybe it was June 17th. And at the time, that I think I remember that being sort of a daily record. But in other parts of the state, I think it's even higher than that. So the caller is exactly right that, you know, in the summertime, the likelihood of that kind of intense downpour is much higher than it is at any other time of year. But I don't know what the state record is. Steve, do you happen to know that?
No, I don't know what the record is. But, you know, related to his other question, I know we've been seeing more of these heavier rains, which would be more than 2 inches at one time over the last couple of decades than we have previously in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's right. I think I've heard the same.
And so the opportunity for flooding has been greater likely over
yeah.
the past.
Yeah, the thing about flooding, as John was indicating, part of it is, you know, what's the level of the streams. So if the streams and rivers are pretty high above normal, then you're going to get a lot of easier flooding. And then also the condition of the soil. If it's too wet or too dry, then the precipitation has nowhere to go but into our basements and to flooding.
Yeah, and once you have the ground, the water level in the ground, when that raises up, there's no place for the water to go.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and that happened in that record winter we had with 100 and something inches of snowfall. By the time all that snow melted, the ground was just saturated.
That's right.
So any precipitation just flooded things.
And 100 inches of snow would be how much rain if it was?
On average, it'd be about 10 inches of standing liquid water. That's a lot of water.
I don't want that in my basement.
No, and it percolates slowly, as Steve points out, as it melts away, it percolates into the ground slowly. So it takes a long time, but saturates the ground. And then the next thing that comes is no place to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the issue that we had, and I think a lot of southern Wisconsin had this, is we were on a well for our water. And the soil was so saturated after the spring, after things melted, that in May, our well turned into artesian well, and water was just flowing out of it because the hydrological pressure was so high.
Man.
It was just pushing up the water level in the well. Yeah. Mm. Amazing.
Yeah.
I happened to be in D.C. I was doing a sabbatical in D.C. So my neighbor called and said, hey, there's water coming out of your well and running down your driveway.
I'm sure that was good news to get on the phone.
No, I flew right in. I flew right home to deal with it.
Oh boy! Well, I can also remember moving into a home on the lake, on Lake Monona, and the previous owner saying, "Oh, we never had a water problem," and we had a serious rainfall, and I went down into the basement, didn't turn the light on, and I stepped into about 8 inches of water.
Wow. Unbelievable.
And about we hadn't even unloaded, half of our belongings were still in the basement waiting to be moved to the proper. Oh, so a lot of it just got moved right back outside and was ruined. Oh, boy.
Oh, man.
Well, enough about me. Let's go to Mary in Pewaukee. Hi, Mary.
Hi, I am here. Sorry about that. Just wiping down the dog. hi, glad to hear the show, and we love you, Larry. And my question is, it didn't start yet, but we're supposed to get close to 50-mile-an-hour winds this afternoon. So I'm wondering why in the last several years, I don't know about, you know, all of Wisconsin or what other areas in the country might have this higher winds, but it's kind of crazy. And is it due to global warming? And this is a new trend, and is it going to get worse?
All right. Good questions, Mary. Thanks for calling. John, you want to start?
Well, yeah, it's a very interesting question. I don't know whether or not the statistics bear out that we've gotten windier. So one could imagine taking sort of the average wind speed during a daytime, maybe recording it every hour and averaging all those numbers together, and then determining from that long data record that we actually have become windier in the recent days compared to 40, 50, 30 years ago. I don't know that that's the case. So that's the first thing I'll say. I will say, though, that we are due for a really big wind today, because this storm that's developing in central Canada, just over the border with the Dakotas, is really going to be quite an intense cyclone. And that's going to make it windy over a large portion of central North America. We'll be on the southern fringe of that region that really gets windy. For us, at least we're on the southern side of this thing, so those winds will be warm, at least today. Tomorrow, it's going to be brutally colder than it's been for a while. Temperature won't even get to 40 maybe tomorrow. But today, it'll be pretty nice. So, Mary, I don't know if it's actually true that we're systematically getting windier. However, storms of the nature of the kind that's about to develop now may become a little bit more of a frequent springtime event if the climate were changing in the ways that we see that it is. It just might not be with our, a target on our backs here in the Great Lakes states. It might be somewhere else in the Northern Hemisphere. But so that's hard to say. But it sure is a good portends well for wind power. We ought to put up a few more windmills and take some advantage of at least that change, if that, in fact, turns out to be one that we can rely upon. I don't know, though, that that's the case yet.
But isn't March a windier, you know, month to begin with? I mean, it's such a volatile month, it seems like to me.
Yes, I think that it is for sure. I mean, it's a time of year where we can have, like we saw last week with the severe weather in the southeast and the southern plains, you can have sort of spring and summertime water vapor contents and other thermodynamic characteristics of the atmosphere married with wintertime dynamics, really strong features in the upper levels of the atmosphere. Those features get weaker as we move further into the spring, and yet the warmth and the moisture gets more intense. And in the middle of the winter, those features are really strong, but they sometimes are starved for moisture. So right in the month of March is when the clash, or when the combination of those two sets of basic ingredients are really at the fore. I think that's true.
Yeah. Mary, thanks again. Jim in Sheboygan, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry. The first call was a guy who wanted to know about maximum rain totals. Up here in Sheboygan, in I believe August of 1998, we had approximately 11 inches of rain in less than 24 hours, probably around 12 hours.
Wow.
Caused major damage. Houses had to be torn down because of the damage. We were a disaster area. So there was a low pressure that just hung over Sheboygan and just rained buckets. That's my...
Wow. Well, Jim, thanks very much for calling. And just to go along with what your experience, a listener had emailed to say, he was talking about northern Wisconsin. They had 12 inches over, you know, kind of a, maybe it was the same storm. It resulted in horrific flooding, and it occurred on two separate occasions.
So that is, was it over a 24-hour period? That's the other thing. You get 12 inches over 24 hours or 4 inches over an hour. That's two types of intensities, both really, really heavy. But
yeah, and you don't want either.
You don't want either.
you definitely do not want either one of those. But 12 inches of rain in a 12 to 24 hour period is one heck of a lot of rain. Well, we're going to keep talking with our two guests today, John Martin and Steve Ackerman. John, professor, former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. Steve Ackerman, vice chancellor for research and grad education at UW, also a professor in that same department. And they will be with us up until 12:30 today, as a matter of fact. We'll take a look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us. And then you can join in with your questions, comments, or maybe your experiences. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network, taking a look at weather and climate with our two guests, John Martin, professor of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences, Steve Ackerman, vice chancellor for research and grad education at UW-Madison, and also a professor in that same Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. What weather questions do you have about our spring weather so far, maybe? Other questions? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email with photos or questions to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Let's go back to the phones. Dave in La Crosse has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Dave. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. In the past, I know you've had questions about global dimming, and I wondered, is the planet getting cloudier? And if so, is that going to reduce the effectiveness of solar panels?
Hmm. Steve,
yeah,
you wanna...
really, yeah, that's a tough question to get because it's a really hard measurement to make. And it's whether or not an area is getting more cloudy or less cloudy is also a function of where you live, so regionally. I think globally, when you use satellite observations, there isn't a trend really for a increased or decreased amount of cloud cover. We looked at a study a number of years ago over the Great Lakes. And so over the Great Lakes themselves, the cloud cover was decreasing over the last 20 years or over the satellite record. But it wasn't a huge amount of decrease. So whether or not it's just part of a long-term fluctuation was kind of hard to pull out of it.
Mm. All right. There we go. Thank you, Dave, for calling. Appreciate it. Let's see. You can join in too. 800-642-1234. Can you guys see the photos?
Yeah, I saw the Rhine photos and the hoarfrost.
Yeah. The hoarfrost photos, are they?
Yeah. So there's two types of ice deposition that we see in the wintertime on trees and things like that. One is rime, and that's when you get super cooled liquid water droplets in the form of fog hitting cold objects, and then they immediately freeze when they hit it. And then the hoarfrost is you don't have any liquid water droplets around. It's just direct deposition of the water in the atmosphere that's in the gas phase, depositing right onto the cold objects and generating ice that way. In one of the figures with the pole, that's a riming condition. And I say that because usually you can see the spikes of ice are heading out in one direction. So sometimes what you'll see in rime ice when you have the super cooled liquid water droplets and a very light wind, it pushes them all in the same direction. And so all that freezing occurs on one side of the object. And on the other side of the object, you won't see any of the ice structure. And I think that's what we're seeing in one of those figures.
Interesting. Rich emailed to say Cross Plains, Wisconsin got 15.33 inches of rain in 24 hours in 2018.
Yeah, I just looked that up.
Yeah.
At the time it happened, it was not verified, and I think it's been subsequently verified, and that broke by 4 inches, the prior state record, which was set at Mellon on the 24th of June, 1946. So it's an incredible event. From August of 2018. Incredible.
Well, 2018 was a wet year, pretty much all around. We had lots of problems with flooding in southern Wisconsin, for sure. I think northern Wisconsin, not so much, but southern Wisconsin, for sure.
Yeah, southern Wisconsin, that was a bad year for flooding in southern Wisconsin. Well, I looked it up during the break, too.
15 inches is about half of the annual total. At a temperate mid-latitude station, to have it in 24 hours is simply unbelievable. There's no way the system can handle that. Eco or industrial. No way.
Joe and Viroqua, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm a former employee of the Soil Conservation Service. I was a government inspector in the construction of the flood control dams. And in a two-year period, we had 3 9-inch rainfall events. There were 2 events in 1 year and one in the other year. Man. There was several $1 million worth of damage done. And now, in 2018, we've had more events that have caused more millions of dollars of flood damage. We used to we design our dams on a 24-hour rainfall period. But a 4-hour period or a 4-inch rainfall in 2 hours would be overwhelming compared to that 24-hour data.
Oh,
yeah. Wow.
Did those 9-inch rain events damage the dams that you were monitoring?
Those 9-inch rainfalls caused damage that amounted to millions of dollars.
Man, unbelievable. Yeah, and that, as Steve said earlier, it does appear that these extraordinarily heavy precipitation events may well become a more frequent occurrence in this warmer, moister climate that we're producing by our industrialization. So we got to worry about that.
And it goes to, again, what Joe's talking about here either. How we construct dams and things of that nature, probably that has to change a bit too, to take this into account.
Yeah, we have to be building those thinking about what the new climate is going to be, not what the current or past climate was. Yeah.
Right, yeah, and absolutely. What record events used to be. You know, Joe points out a 4-inch rain in 2 hours is now something that can happen with a little more regularity. It may end up being 6 inches for the whole day, but the 4 inches in those 2 hours can be the thing that pushes you past the threshold. So we have to worry about it in different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe, thanks again. Appreciate it. Al in Appleton, we'll go to you now. Hi, Al.
Hi. Yeah, I was wondering if your guests are familiar with a Nova special on public television, probably 15 years ago. And what it was about was after 9/11, all of the planes, all jets were grounded, and global temperatures across the globe at various stations in this Nova special they were talking about went up significantly just in that week that planes were grounded. And the conclusion of the program, as I recall, was that they think that global temperatures are actually even warmer than what we think. But because of so much jet traffic, that contrails and water vapor left by jets may actually be slightly cooling the planet. And I was just wondering, I don't know, I haven't heard anything more about this NOVA special. I was just wondering if any of your guests could speak to it.
Steve, let's go to you.
Yeah, I remember there was that faculty in Whitewater, David,
yeah,
something, I think, had actually looked at that and was an author on that study. And what I remember, it took them a while because the statistics, you really got to pull those statistics out. And what I remember is that he did see a warming over the air traffic way. So, you know, places like Chicago where you have a lot of jet traffic, right? Because that's where the contrails wouldn't form. There have been studies to look at the different cloud types. So even when the cloud area coverage may not be changing, if the cloud type is changing, then that'll change how it impacts, temperature at the surface. And contrails, thin cirrus, tend to overall cause of a warming, even though that seems odd, because the amount of energy they reflect out to space which would cause a cooling, doesn't overcome the infrared effect they have, where they emit more energy down to the surface and would warm it. So, I forget his last name right now, but he was in Whitewater, and he really looked at this study right after 9/11 very carefully.
Yeah, that was good work.
Al, thank you for calling. Dan in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. I'm just wondering about the long-term water levels in the Great Lakes and Green Bay, you know, with climate change. What do the projections look like with that? And then also I have one observation. I was reading an article that both Canada and Wisconsin and Minnesota might be some of the most valuable real estate in the country 100 years from now with global warming because of our abundance of fresh water and temperate climates. And I was just wondering if you'd comment on that as well.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dan, for calling. John, do you want to take a crack to begin?
Yeah, I think one of the things that has a big influence on the water, the lake levels generally, is ice cover. And in the wintertime, seems like a bit of a, you know, I would never have guessed that myself, but I've come to understand it from other people suggesting it, that if you put a lot of ice on the lakes, like we did a few winters ago, I think 14, 15 was like 96% ice covered or something like that. And that was really the end of a long, long series, ever since Steve and I have been on the air, actually, of the lakes getting lower and lower and lower. And it suddenly ceased that year. And that's because there was no evaporation throughout the long winter. And that's one of the ways that water leaves these lakes. And they have a really small watershed. That is, the geographic land area around them upon which when it rains or snows, that water eventually gets back to the lakes. It's exceptionally small for the size of the lakes themselves. And so if you take water out by evaporation, you have to get lucky with storms forming right on or near the shoreline for that water to be replenished. And that's not always the case. So I think there's almost, because the watershed is so small, it seems to me, I don't know much about this subject, but it seems to me that the lakes are biased toward losing water by evaporation as ice cover. So as the planet warms up, I suspect, and the ice cover becomes systematically less extreme each year, there's probably going to be a chronic problem of water levels in the Great Lakes. The only thing that might work in favor of replenishing it is this exact thing we've been talking about quite independently today, which is extreme rainfall events in the summertime. They may actually get organized, let's say, in the Black Hills of South Dakota and make their way over to the Great Lakes and drop a lot of water back in. So there's some give and take there, but I don't know what's going to win out in the long run.
Yeah. Steven, yeah, anything to add?
Yeah, the only thing I'll add, as John points out, is that, yeah, we may have more heavier events, but they have to hit the area where it'll get into the lake. Of course, the other thing we have is, you know, we have the, I guess it's the Army Corps of Engineers who control what the level, or to some degree control what the level is. So there's also that impact.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's going to be really valuable, but there are a lot of packs between the U.S. and Canada that are already trying to control who has access to that water so that we're not pumping it out to you know, Florida or someplace. And this is not only a need. Fresh water is not only a need. This is also a unique resource for the area in terms of a lot of different ecologies, not just how much water we drink.
Absolutely. Well, let's see. We've got some emails I wanted to get to as well. Ray from Cable emailed to ask, why does it seem we have more windy days in the high terrain, Lake Superior, Bayfield County, Mississippi Divide, you know, areas?
Well, there you've got the benefit of whatever's going on the large synoptic, so-called synoptic scale, whether the progression of weather systems across the country and across the region, like today, this wind that we're experiencing today is a result of an individual weather system making its way across central Ontario as it develops. But if you're in a region of high terrain, you have the added influence of terrain-induced flows, which can be really substantial, mountain and valley winds, and then flows through gaps in hills and so on. And so local spots can be quite independent with heavy winds of places that are quite near them, but not in the exact vicinity of the terrain. So that was a very strong characteristic of flows in the Olympic Mountain Range and also in the Cascades when I was in Washington State. It was very common to hear from people who live in certain particular locations. Wow, we had an 80-knot wind all night last night and no place else in the region did. So you get really local effects from topography.
If you're on a in the wind, you're downwind, then come across the Great Lake, there's less friction. So that's going to
another thing, yeah.
Strong.
But that geographic structure and then man-made structures, like, you know, there's a reason Chicago is called the Windy City. Those big, tall buildings funnel that.
Yep. There's lots of gap flow in Chicago. That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. Right.
Oh, man. Wayne in Madison, your turn. Hi, Wayne.
Good morning. I'm a mechanical engineer located in Madison. I work for Prior Engineering Services, but I'm the owner. But I'm doing a solar design right now, and I was interested in knowing how often do we have clouds and how often do we have sunny days. So I couldn't find anything. So what I did is I went to the weather history for Madison, and I went through every single day looking for whether, you know, the hours of sun, the hours of clouds, partially cloudy and full, or mostly cloudy. And wrote it all down, and then I went back to 1980 and looked at that. And so far, I don't have a lot of data, but so far, I don't see any significant difference between 1980 and 2020. So I wanted to just add that.
Way, and thank you. That's interesting, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that is. And I'm thinking that data that you got, were those visual observations from when the National Weather Service had an active meteorology making those observations?
Yeah, it comes from the Dane County Airport.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
That is very cool. Thanks, Wayne. Appreciate that very much. That's very interesting. Not much change. Abby was wondering if we might get, and we'll get John in from Vernon County at some point. But Abby's wondering if we might get any more snow before warm is here to stay. So
John is hoping so. I don't know if we will, but John certainly is hoping for it.
No, I'm really not. You know, I think this has been an excruciating year for everybody. And we did have a pretty good snowy period of our winter. We averaged about normal for total snowfall, but it snowed all at once from mid-January to the end of February, and it didn't melt during that time. So I enjoyed this winter as much as a person could in a COVID year. But I think we all need warmth and sunshine. So unfortunately, however, the atmosphere doesn't care what we need. And so the chances of it snowing again, but not accumulating, are very high. The chances of it snowing and accumulating are substantially lower because we're at the end of March now. So I'd say, without any particular reference to the current conditions that are outside now and how they might evolve, I'd say that the climatology is probably at about 20%, 25% for another measurable snow. It's probably at 50 to 70% for more flurries in the air before we're all done. So that's, taken all together, that's not so bad.
Yeah, that won't keep us out of the garden for very long.
That's right. That's right. Good way to put it.
And my snowblower is going permanently into the back of the garage and out of sight. I don't care if it snows again or not. It's not
right. You know, that's right, Larry. You can depend on the solar shovel in an April snowstorm. Just let the sun come out the next day. Make a little black spot on your driveway and the sun will do the rest. You don't need to do the work.
Oh, Claire emailed to say that in the summer of 97 and 98, the Milwaukee area, Wauwatosa, they received 11 inches of rain and 12 to 13 inches of rain within 24 hours, two 100-year rains within 14 months.
Yeah, amazing.
Much damage. FEMA was involved. There were drownings in the river. And in 98, her neighborhood was destroyed. Her neighborhood was. All residents were moved out. And their homes were all bulldozed.
Unreal.
It was a very, as you can imagine, a very traumatic experience. Yeah. John, in Vernon County, have you got a quick one for us?
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to ask a question real quick, but have a couple comments. In Vernon County, some of our areas, we think the totals were closer to 17 inches of rain. The dam failures had something to do with a lot of the damage, or a lot to do with a lot of the damage, but some also has to do with the farming practices around the area. And I was just wondering if I know that there have been studies done on that particular part as far as trying to figure out how can we prevent these floods or this damage like that. But I'm interested in what is people's opinions on also the equation of farming practices into this whole business of global warming and rainfall events.
Okay. Thank you, John. John Martin, a comment?
I think generally that's a really good point, that land use and the way that it's been changing is a multiplier factor for any of the atmospheric changes that might be going on. So I know some years ago, maybe now as many as 10 years ago, parts of southern China had really serious flooding, widespread flooding, and it turned out that it wasn't really because the rainfalls were so exceptional. They were, you know, better than average, but not in the category we've been just recently talking about, the 11-inch rainfall in Wisconsin, stuff like that, that are 3 and 4 standard deviations above the average. But it was the way the land had been processed over the last several decades prepared the ground to not be able to handle that water and that runoff. And that leads to huge damage. It doesn't really impact the amount of rain, of course. The climate signal of the rain is not going to be affected by how we change the land. But the damage that the rain that actually falls can do is greatly exacerbated by what we do to the land. So it's a complicated interaction. And we have to be careful, John, to keep that in mind.
John, thank you so much. And Stephen, John, thank you so much. Boy, it flew by. You're going to be on the last Monday of April, and we'll do this all over again. Thanks again.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
John Martin and Steve Ackerman. John, they're both professors in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences, but Steve is also Vice Chancellor for Research and Graduate Education at UW-Madison. And they'll be back the last Monday of next month. Just looking ahead, tomorrow at 11, we'll talk with a nutrition expert about the release of new U.S. dietary guidelines and what constitutes a healthy diet. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening, and please do stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.